Is this the first one you're doing in the...
Second.
Plus the second one.
We'll talk about it after Shia, if you have the time.
Yeah, yeah. Time,
you'll let me know what you...
Question whether I want to join, but I'll talk
about it. Oh, yeah. We'll talk about that. I'll tell you what it's about. Okay, Rabosai, where are we up to? We should be on Daf Gimel Amud Beis. Tana Rabbanan. So let's see if we can find the place.
It's very hot. So
thank you. In the wide lines at the bottom of the page, the second of the wide lines, at the end of the second line, you'll see Tana Rabbanan. We have that?
Yes.
Okay, great. So now we're talking about the Sheet of Rebbe. Before the Sheet of Rebbe, in our Mishnah, Dini Mamnas is Bishlosha, which means that you need three judges that make up a Bezdin for Dine Mamanos, for monetary law. However, Tana Rabbanan Dine Mamanos Bishlosha, Rebbe Omer Bechamisha. Rebbe says that you need five judges. Now it's interesting because this Braisa, the way it's quoted here, is different than the way it's quoted in the Mechilta. The Mechilta, you know, is the Medrash of Halacha on Sefer Shmos, and in the Mechilta, instead of Rebbe, it says Rebbe Meir. We have it as Rebbe. So we're going to learn it the way the Talmud Bavli has it, namely, this is a tradition that's attributed to Rebbe, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, and he requires no less than five judges. Now, Rebbe gives us a little bit of a clue, of an insight, as to why he requires five judges. And he says, Kideshi gomer hadin bishlosha. In other words, we need a horah, we need a verdict that's going to be issued by three judges. Now, they make up the majority of the court. If you have three judges and only three judges on the court, then the majority would be how many?
Two.
But if you have five judges on the court, then you can have a majority of three. So that Rebbe understands that there are two different halachas. There's one halacha in how many judges have to sit on the court. And then there's a halacha of how many judges have to issue the verdict. And Rebbe says that, let's go backwards. We're going to start with how many judges have to issue the verdict. And the answer is three. Well, in order to set up a Bezdin, which will guarantee that no matter what the majority is, however it falls, you'll have three that are issuing the verdict, you need a Bezdin of five. Because if you only have a Bezdin of three, then you could have an issue, a verdict that's issued by two judges, and Rebbe requires that the final verdict be issued by three judges. So the number three, from Rebbe's perspective, is not answering, it's not addressing the question, well, how many judges make up the court, but rather how many judges have to issue a verdict. And the answer to that is that the Torah says Elohim, Elohim, Elohim three times, and that establishes that you need three different judges, all of whom coincide and agree that this is the final decision. This is the verdict. He's Chayav, he's Zakai, and so forth. So now, how are we going to get a verdict of three judges if you only start with a court of three judges? So now let's address a different question. What's the minimal number of judges that comprise the Beis Din? And the answer is five. Because if you have five, then you know for sure that you'll have a verdict of a majority, which is going to be issued by three judges. And according to Rebbe, the verdict has to be issued by three judges. Now let's just point out, this is what I'm about to say now is for those who were with me yesterday. If you weren't with me yesterday, I don't expect you to understand what I'm about to say. So don't feel bad that you left out, but I don't want to leave out those who were here yesterday. We had a machlokas yesterday between Rav Yoshia and Rav Yonasan. And Rav Yoshia had three Elohims from which he derived three judges. On the other hand, Rav Yonasan drops the first Elohim that has to do with Tchilas Drosha, but he's left with only two Elohims, which means two judges. And Rabbi Yehuda says the third judge is necessary Kedeshi Bezdin Nota in order to make an odd number of members on the court. Our sugya of Rebbe has to be attributed to Rav Yoshia, meaning Rav Yoshia says that there are three Elohims, and therefore we need a Beis Din of three. Rebbe took this a step further. Rebbe said not only does the Beis Din itself have to be comprised of three judges, but the Horaz Din has to be issued by three judges. Hence I need a court that's made up of five judges in order to guarantee that I'll have a verdict that's issued by three judges. If on the other hand we go with Rav Yonasan, and Rav Yonasan says that there's only two Elohims, and really a Beis Din is made up of two members, we only need a third member in order to avoid a situation of a stalemate, right? If we have an even number of judges. So that's called a Beis Din Noter. So in that case, Rebbe doesn't get off the ground, because Rebbe could not have possibly accepted Rabbi Yonasan that really a court is made up of two judges, because if Rebbe would say, well, the court that's made up of two judges means that you need a Horaz Din of two judges, then all you would need on a court is three judges, because then you'd have a verdict that was issued by two judges.
So would Rebbe agree that if you start with three, if you get a unanimous opinion, it's okay, but then if you don't, you have to then... Because they do that today, you know, you have...
Right, but Rebbe...
They start with three judges, and if it doesn't reach a certain verdict, then they expand it.
Right, no, Rebbe is saying the following, that we're going to assume that we have to get a Beis Din that no matter what happens, we'll definitely get a verdict of three. It has to be such that when you establish the din, the court, you know, when you begin the din, when the judgment begins, and you have to set up a Beis Din, that Beis Din has to be structured in a way with a number of judges that will guarantee that the verdict will be handed down by three. That halacha in what makes up a Beis Din is a function, is a result of how many judges have to issue the verdict.
But then I don't understand why there's two dinim. Because if din number one is that there has to be three judges, but din number two, which is a separate din, that it has to be a judgment or a verdict by three judges, what's the point of number one if
so it goes the other way around. You know, it's one and then two, switch around the numbers. The first din is that you need a verdict of three.
Okay.
That's what the Torah means when it repeats the name Elohim three times.
Okay.
Then Rebbe addresses a second question. Well, how many people are on the court? And he says, well, I need to get a court that can definitely, under all circumstances, guarantee me that there'll be a verdict of three. So we start the process by analyzing Elohim times three. We come to the conclusion that means that the judgment and the verdict has to be handed down by three judges. Then we go on to the secondary question, which is also a primary question. How many judges comprise a Beis Din such that we know for sure, it's guaranteed that they can hand down a Horah, and a Horah needs three judges. So the answer is we need five members of the court. And that's what the Gemara is going to more or less flesh out over here in the next line. Atu bitlasa milo gamar dina betray. Now, you might ask the question, why do you need five members of the court, according to Rebbe, so that you'll get a majority of the five members? Atu bitlasa, if they would judge in front of three, milo gomar dina vitrei, isn't it possible that we can issue a verdict based on two judges? This is what Rebbe means to say. That the final verdict has to be handed down by three. And if you're going to judge in a court of three, how do you know that there's a what might happen is that all three judges will unanimously agree to one decision? You don't know that. So you must set up a Beis Din which will, under all circumstances, as we said before, guarantee that you'll be able to hand out a verdict of three. Hence, I require five members of the court. Alma kasava tlasa ki ksivi bigmar dina ksiva. When the Torah repeats Elohim three times to teach me that you need three judges, it's referring to the gmar din. Gmar din means the final verdict. The final verdict has to be issued by three judges. It doesn't have to be a unanimous decision, but we have to set up a court now that has enough members on the Beis Din such that we can guarantee, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that the Gemar Din, meaning the final judgment, will be handed down by three judges. Hence, we need five judges on the court. Alma Kasavar we see that tlasa ki ksiva v'gmar dina ksiva, that when the Torah requires three judges, it's for the gmar, for the Gemara din. And again, all this is based on Rav Yoshia, who says that there are three times that the Torah requires judges. Each one of those three judges make up the court, and they're going to make up the Gemara din according to Rebbe. And that's what's going on. Now the next... Yeah.
Sorry. So can we just say that Rebbe's Svara is just applied from Berbia and the Mishnah. Anytime you see three, but he's saying it's five with a majority of three.
That is straight across the board.
From the very beginning.
Right. And the basis of his shita is that when the Torah requires three judges, it's not referring to the makeup of the court, but it's meant to the Gemara Din. And in order to set up a Gemara Din of three, you need a court that's made up of five judges. Now there's someone here that's not a happy camper. He's upset. His name is Rabbi Avoh. We've spoke about Rabbi Avoh on many occasions when we learned Masechta Pesachim. But the first word in the Gemara, the next word in the Gemara, is a very problematic word. It says Megadef. Now Megadef, if you translate it literally, is harsh beyond belief. I mean, when you talk about belief in God, for example, Megadef is a blasphemer. And it sounds like Rabbi Avoh is accusing Rebbe of blasphemy. You know, so I just want to point out to you that there's another girsa in the Gemara that adds a yud. Instead of Megadev, it's Magdif. If you add a yud in between the Dalet and the Pei, you make it into a verb which is called Magdif. Now, Gidu. Now, if you take our girsa, then the root, the shoresh of the word Megadev is Giduf. Giduf means blasphemy. And that's the most heavy accusation that you could say about someone, that he's a blasphemer. If, on the other hand, you add the yud Magdif, then the shoresh, the root of the word, is Garaf or Godaf. Godaf and Garaf are synonymous. And what they mean is, and you'll have to help me here with the English, let's say you have let's say soil or so, and you want to shovel it out. That's called megaref. Are you familiar with that? Well, if you learn the second parak of Shabbos, you'll see...
To rake the coals.
Excellent, to rake the coals. So the word here is to rake. Okay, that's what magdif means. He rakes it. Ka'adam ha-goref, like a person who rakes. Mashma'uso, what does it mean? That I'm not going to accept what you said. I'm going to take it completely out. I'm going to rake it out, so to speak. So there's nothing left to it. But that's a little bit less of an insult than the gears that we have, which is called... Megadev, which is kind of philosophy.
They both fit, because there's an expression today, he raked them over the coals, which is sort of the same concept, you know.
Right. But here we're not saying that he raked them over the coals, but he raked out the coals, you know, so he left them with nothing. Now let's take a look at what Rabbi Avoh is saying here. Why does he raise all heaven against this understanding of Rebbe? Elamei Ata, if this is the logic of Rebbe, then to hey Sanhedrin Gedola Tzricha Me'av Arboim V'Echad. Watch what happens here. You start with the Gemara Din. When the Torah gives you the number of judges on the court, it's telling you about the verdict itself. Well, in the case of the great Sanhedrin, we need 71 judges. Well, you're going to have a decision of 71 judges. Now, in order to guarantee that you'll have a decision of 71 judges, you have to end up with a court that's made up of 141 judges, which means that even if you have a dissenting opinion, you'll still be left with 71 judges. No one has ever entertained the idea that in order to set up the High Court of Israel, you need 141 judges. He goes on, Rabbi Avoh, and he says, if you're right, then Tehei Sanhedrin Ketana, the smallest Sanhedrin, which is made up of 23 judges, Tzricha Arboim V'chamisha, you're going to need 45 members of the court, Kedei Sheyigamar Din, Bishloshim, Bishloshim V'yesrim. In other words, if you have to have a verdict that's issued by 23 judges, you're going to need a court that's made up of 45 judges, and if, let's say, if we subtract 23 from 45, what do we get?
22,
right? So you can have 22 judges dissenting and 23 judges in favor, and you'll have a decision that's made by 23 judges. Does everybody follow the point of the logic here, Rabbi Avo? Mm-hmm. Rabbi Avo is saying that you should be consistent here. If you're telling me that when the Torah gives you a number of judges, it's telling you that there's got to be a Gemar Din of that number, so there's got to be a verdict that's handed down by that number of judges, you're going to have to, and then you want to say you have to make up a Beis Din in such a way that it guarantees that you will be able to have a decision, a verdict handed down by that number of judges, then we're going to have to multiply the number of judges on the court in all cases. Let's not just talk about Shlosha, let's talk about Esrim V'Shlosha, let's talk about Shiva V'Yechad. Ella, therefore, Rabbi Avo comes to the conclusion that since we cannot maintain this logical position, in other words, even though it would be consistent with Rebbe, we're going to have to say that when the Torah defines the number of judges in a Sanhedrin Agdol, and it says, Osfoli, God turns to Moshe Rabbeinu and he commands him, Osfoli Shivim Ish, gather together 70 members of the court, then Omar Achmona, what the Torah is telling us here, this is in Bamidbar Perek Yud Aleph in Parshas Balosra, it means Misha'as Asifa Shivim. It's not referring to the Gemar Din, but let's emphasize the word Asifa. Asifa means gather this number of judges together in order to form a Beis Din. And we're going to find a similar interpretation when it comes to the judgment of 23. The Torah says, also in the same Sefer Bamidbar, but much later on in Sefer Bamidbar, it says, "Vishavtu ha'idah v'itzilu ha'idah," which means that the Sanhedrin HaKetan has to be made up of 23 judges. You may recall that we discussed that the Eidah is a reference to the number 10, and it says it twice, so that gives you 20, and then we need a possible majority of 2, so get a majority of 2, you're going to need 23, the whole 9 yards that we discussed. Is Nami, when the Torah is speaking about Veshaftu, we're not talking about the Gemar Din, the final verdict, but we're talking about the Shiput in modern Hebrew. Shiput means the process of judgment, meaning the entire process from beginning to the end. Bishas Shvitas Eidah, that when this Eidah representing the Beis Din does its Shvitah, I mean the Mishpat, we're not up to the Gemar Din, we need 23 judges. So Chinami, we should be consistent and apply that to the case of Dini Mamonos, where the Torah says in Parshas Mishpatim in Nikrav Balabais El Elohim, and we derive from the word Elohim that we, because it says in 3 times that we need 3 Dayanim, Mishas Kreva, V'Nikrav. V'Nikrav means when, let's say, Reuven subpoenas Shimon and sues him in a court of law, he brings Shimon close to the judges, meaning that Shimon has to now stand in judgment in front of the judges, is Mishas Kreva from that moment, Shlosha, we need 3 Dayanim, but we don't need 3 Dayanim for the Gemar Din. And if you have 3 judges on the court, that's sufficient, even though the final decision and the verdict is going to be handed down by 2 judges. We don't need 3 judges, just like in the case of a Beis Din of Shloshim of 23 judges. We don't need a decision unanimous, a decision of 23 judges. We need a majority of the 23 judges. And in the case of Sanhedrin Gedolah, we don't need a decision that's handed down with a unanimous agreement by 73 judges. We just need a Beis Din that's comprised of 71 judges, and then the verdict is going to be handed down by the majority of those judges. Therefore, the Gemara is of the opinion now, after we've raked out all the coals, right, that Rabbi Avo has succeeded in doing so, that we have to come up with an alternative understanding of Rebbe. And what's the alternative understanding of Rebbe? Okay, now this understanding of Rebbe, is based on a principle which I want to just introduce, because we're going to be discussing this principle for a while now, which is called Yesh Eim LaMikra. So let me write this on the board if I can. Yeah, I think I put this away so it won't get lost.
It's not lost.
Okay. Alright. This is called Yesh Eim LaMikra. Right now, just copy it over, and then we'll try to explain what this means.
It says Eish, Yesh,
Eim. This is the Aleph Mem. Okay. Ela Hainu Taima de Rebbe. What's the logic of Rebbe? Rebbe holds Asher Yashiun Elohim. Okay. Now, this is in the same parsha that we've been discussing all along of Dini Mamonos, and the Torah uses the word Yarshiun. So we're going to focus our attention on the word Yarshiun, and we're going to ask whether or not this word is in the singular or in the plural. Mm-hmm. Now it's interesting because Yarshiun, as you see it on your page in the Gemara, that's not the way we have it in the Sefer Torah, has a vav before the nun, between the ayin and the nun. You see that? Mm-hmm. Now, the reason why you're seeing on your page a vav, again, if we have a chumash, I'll ask you to open up the chumash possibly. We have to get a chumash here that's chained down. And will never be removed.
Do you want me to get a couple of them?
If you don't, just one. I just want to prove to you about this vav here, just for a second. It's Osios Machimos. You know, if you see it in front of your eyes, it's a little bit more profound. Okay. Now, the word Yarshiun is the way I'm pronouncing it, or the way I'm reading it. That's called mikra, if you see on the blackboard. Mikra means the way I read it. Uh-huh. That's not the way it's written in the Torah. I hope the art school will give you the way it's written in the Torah. I don't know if they're going to do that for us. I usually use the big blue chumashim, so this gets me totally... Okay. No, it's just I get disoriented. You know, it's like, even though they do have Rashi on them. Okay, so we're looking in Parshas Mishpatim
4:28.
Oh, excellent. Thank you so much. You saved me a whole hassle here. 4:28. Okay. Oh, so if you... Baruch Hashem. If you look in the Chumash, I'll pass this over to you. It says Asher Yashion Elokim, meaning the Vav is gone. If the Vav is gone, then under the Ayin you put a Komatz, and the difference is between plural and singular. So just follow this. The way it's written, which is called the Ksiv, it's in the singular. The way it's read, it's in the plural, as if there were a vav there. And that's based on a certain tradition about how to vocalize the words in the Torah. And the way we vocalize them, or the way we read them, that's the key mikra here, is not necessarily the way it's written in the Torah. Now the word aim here, which translates as a mother, means this is the determining genetic code over here. In other words, the primary way that we have to interpret the Torah is based on mikra, not the way it's written in the Torah, but the way we pronounce it. Okay then? So if you want, you can add the word here, mikra pronouncement. Right? And pronouncement is based on vowels. Correct? Now the vowels are added based on the tradition of how to read the word. And when we want to know how to read the word, we're going to read it according to the vowels. That's called Yesh Eim LaMikra. Now, even though we're reading it like that, that's not the way it's written in the Torah. For example, here, it doesn't say Asher Yashi'un in this text, because we have a what's called a Mesores. Okay, so this is all one. Now we're going on to number two for a moment. And that's called Yesh Eim LaMesores. And Mesores means the way it's written. So we have now a discrepancy between the way it's written, which is called Yesh Eim LaMesores, and the way we read it based on the vocalization and the vowels, and that's called Yesh Eim LaMikra. And all this is going to come to the fore in the word Yarshi'un. Okay? Yarshi'un. Sorry about this. It didn't come out clearly. So in the pasuk it says, Asher Yarshi'un Elokim. I'll give you this chumash so you can see it inside. But here there's a discrepancy between the way it's written. That's based on the Mesorah that we have, that we have to write it in a certain way. So for example, if you were a scribe, a Sofer Stam, you must be an absolute expert in the Mesorahs. Why? Because if you just read the word the way you were taught to read it, which is called Yesh Eim LaMikra, you're going to write it imprecisely, incorrectly. So for example, the Sofer is going to have to leave out this Vav, because the Mesorahs tells us it's written without a Vav. How do we interpret it? Well, that depends upon these two opinions. The first opinion says, Yesh Eim LaMikra, we're going to interpret it the way we know you have to read the word, even though it's not the way it's written. And that's Mikra. Mikra means the Lashon Kriya. Kriya means the way we read it, the way we pronounce it. So we're going to interpret this word as if there were a Vav there, because we know that we have to read it as Asher Yarshi'un. That's called Yesh Eim LaMikra. Now, if Rebbe, we're about to analyze Rebbe as to why you need five judges on the court, if Rebbe sees this Yarshi'un as if it had a Vav in it, that's how he sees it. Why? Because we have a tradition that you read it as if there was a Vav there, which is called Yesh Eim LaMikra, then we end up with a plural. Okay, that's the first point. So it's Yarshi'un with a Vav. And that's Trey. You see the next word in the Gemara is Trey. Trey means Yarshi'un already teaches me two judges. Now keep in mind that the word Yarshi'un in this parasha, that the word Elohim in this parasha appears how many times? Three times. But the first one is already in plural. The other two are in singular. You don't have a plural. But Asher Yarshi'un Elohim, the first one, already gives me two judges. Now, the next Elohim is going to give me a third judge, and the next Elohim, which is the third Elohim, is going to give me four judges.
You can't have all that, so you have the fifth to make it five.
Right, why are we going to add the fifth?
So,
correct, we need a Beis Din Nota. We can't have a Beis Din Shakul.
Wow.
I mean, there's a whole other pshat in Rebbe. You know, until now, we've been assuming that according to Rebbe, you need five judges in order to guarantee that the final verdict, the Gemara Din, will be handed down by three judges. Now we're saying there's no such halacha that when the Torah tells you how many judges, it's talking about the final verdict. When the Torah tells you how many judges, it's talking exclusively about how many judges make up the Beis Din for the Shiput, or as the Gemara calls it, the Asifa, you know, when we gather together the judges. But why does Rebbe require five judges? And the answer is because he reads the Pasuk Asher Yarshi'un. I'd love to see how they translate Yarshi'un in English. They should say they, hopefully. Let's see if they come up and they come through in the clutch here. He skirts the issue. He just says the court finds guilty. But it should be they find guilty.
Yarshi'un means The judges, right?
The judges, right. But it's got to be two judges if it's Yarshi'un. They. Do you understand my point?
I'm not following the I understand what you're saying, but I'm not following the logic to get to the conclusion. In other words, the logic. No, this, or maybe it's the sequence of the words in the Torah versus.
No. It all depends upon Yarshi'un means they or he.
Right.
If you have it as Yarshi'un, he will find them guilty, then it's only one judge. If you read it as Yarshi'un and add the vav between the ayin and the nun,
right,
then it's they will find him guilty. Rebbe is going to interpret the pasuk based on our tradition that even though there's no vav in the ksiv, in the way it's written, in the kri, the way we read it, based on our, you know, tradition,
right,
we read it as if there were above there, they will find him guilty. That means a minimum requirement of how many judges?
Two.
Now we have another two Elohims that give me one and one. So we start with two. The first Elohim is Asher Yarshi'un, they, meaning two judges. Then we have another Yarshi'un, which is jacks it up to three judges. Then we have another Yarshi'un, which jacks it up to four judges.
Is the word Yarshi'un used three times? It's Elohim.
No.
It's Elohim that's used three times.
Right.
Oh, so
in the first time, the word Elohim must refer to two judges.
Right. That's
because it says Yarshi'un Elohim. They, the judges, will find him guilty. So Yarshi'un means to find him guilty. You could say, I will find him guilty in the singular. You could say, they will find him guilty in the plural. If you add the vav, Yarshi'un translates as they will find him guilty. So the Elohim in the first round has got to be two judges. The word Elohim itself means one judge. But when it says Yarshi'un Elohim, it turns the Elohim into two judges. Now we're only left with four. How do we jack it up to five? So the Gemara says, Nemar Elohim Lamata, Nemar Elohim Lamala. Ma lematayim shnayim af lemala shnayim. So it means that the first Elohim is going to be shnayim. Then we have another two because of Elohim Elohim. The ain bezdin shakel. We can't have an equal number of an even number of members of the court. Is mosif and aleim od. We have to add another judge echad. Harekan chamisha dayanim. Hence we require five dayanim. But the final decision will be handed down by whom?
Three.
By three the dayanim. So we only need five dayanim in order to set up the bezdin, and that's all because of Rabbi Yavol's argument that the shiput and the asifa has to be five. But as far as the final verdict is concerned, the final verdict will be handed down by three. So again, when Rebbe says that the verdict will be handed down by three, that's not the reason why he requires five. Because if you're going to say that, then we're in trouble with a bezdin of Chav Gimel and a bezdin of Ayin Aleph. The reason why Rebbe requires five is because the Torah requires five. And as far as the decision is concerned, the decision will be made by three. That's the new formulation of Rebbe. And it's all based on the principle called Yesh Eim, everybody, La Mikra. Now we're up to the Rabbanon, and we're turning now to Daf Dalid Omen Aleph. The Rabbanon, Yarshi'un Ksiv. Notice that, what are the Rabbanon dropping?
The Vav.
Once they drop the Vav, then without the Vav, you read it in the singular. Yarshi'un means, and he will find them guilty, if you leave out the Vav. And therefore, what the Chachamim are expressing here is a different approach to how we interpret the Torah, and that's called Yesh Eim LaMesores. What does that mean, Yesh Eim LaMesores? We have a Mesores. Whenever you hear the word Mesores in our context here, we're going to talk about the Sofrim, if you know what I mean. I'm just using that as a mnemonic device. It helps me remember. If it doesn't help you, then just drop it. But what I mean by Mesores is that if you are a Sofer, you have to have a Mesores to know exactly how to write the Torah. So if there's a conflict between the Mesores, the way we have to write the Torah, and the kri, the way we have to read the pasuk based on the vowels, then we have machlokas how to interpret the word. According to Rebbe, we interpret it based on the mikra, the way we read it, the way we vocalize it, because of the vowels. And therefore we're going to read it Yarshi'un, as if there were a Vav there, based on Yesh Eim LeMikra. The Rabbanan, on the other hand, hold that let's look at the Mesoris the way it's written in the Torah. We have an unbroken tradition that has to be written without a Vav. And if, let's say, you would add the Vav, and the Sofer would add the Vav, the whole Sefer Torah is invalid. It's possible. Because the Rabbanan hold Yesh Eim LeMesoris. Now when we interpret the word, we're going to interpret it based on the Mesoris, the way we have to write it, not the way we have to read it. So again, the first opinion is the way we have to read it. The second opinion is the way we have to write it. The first opinion is called Yesh Eim LaMikra. Mikra means the way we read it. The second opinion in the Gemara's language is called Yesh Eim LaMesoris, the way it's written. See, here's the tricky part. You know, how do you remember that Mesoris means the way it's written? You know, that's, if you can memorize that. So that's why I use the scribe. That's just Berzon talking. You know, that for me, that's a shortcut. How do I know that Mesoris is a scribe? Because the scribe has to have the Mesoris. You know, we used to the way we read the words. Yeah, so so far, you know, he's playing with fire if he just remembers how to read the word, because he's not going to spell it correctly in the Sefer Torah. I'll give you an example. I'm teaching at 11:45 the third parak of Ksubas. The third parak of Ksubas is all about a nara. A nara means a girl who's above the age of 12. In the Torah, the word nara is written without a he. So if you're a scribe and you write the word nara with a he at the end, the Sefer Torah, you can put it to Gneza. You know what I'm saying? It's possible. Right? But the Kriya, the way we read it, is as if the word the hay was there. That's called Yesh Eim LeMikra, Na'ara. Okay? I'm just trying to give you an example that very often the discrepancies between the way the Torah wants it written and the way the Torah wants it read. Now, in the ultimate perfection of it, the ideal sense, we're going to learn something from both. You know, it's the fact that the Torah omitted a word or a letter, that's going to be meaningful as well. But we're not up to that level. Right now we're on the level where it's an absolute conflict. You know, we don't know why the Torah wants it written in one way and read in another way. We don't have an answer to that question. There are answers, you have to trust me. But we're not up to that point. At this point, we're seeing it as presenting it as a head-on collision. What do we do in this head-on collision? Who is supreme? Supremacy is given to the mother. So nobody should say anything bad about Jewish mothers. Right? We see that the Torah has a great deal of respect for Jewish mothers. The Jewish mother, that's the supreme, you know, the power over here. So Yesh Eim LeMikra means, how do we read it? Because that's the way we teach it. The way we teach it is not the way we write it. But Yesh Eim LeMikra says, Yesh Eim LeMesoris claims no. The fact that the Sefer Torah itself has to be written in a certain way, that's the mother. That's the primary way we interpret it. And now we have an afkamina as to whether the Torah jacks up the number of judges from 3 to 4. Because if you're going to read it with the Vav, that's the way we read it, that's called Yesh Eim LeMikra, then it's in plural, hence we need 4 judges, and whenever you see 4, you got to get it up to the even the odd number. If on the other hand, Yesh Eim LeMesoris, well, the way the Mesoris has you writing the word Yarshiun, it's Yarshiun without a Vav, and the Sofer has to be very careful to omit that Vav, and then we interpret the meaning of the Torah based on the Mesoris of how it's written, and the way it's written without a Vav, it's in the singular, hence we have Elohim 1, 2, 3 judges, and not a 4th judge. Now, Rabosai, from here until pretty much the end of Daf Dalet Amud Beis, actually it even goes on a little bit, spills over to Daf Hei Amud Aleph. Alright, so we have now a full blot Gemara that is not Masechta Sanhedrin. It's accidentally here in Masechta Sanhedrin. So if I were to tell you I wanted to learn just Masechta Sanhedrin, I would be ripping out all these pages from my Gemara. Chas v'shalom. Now, why would I tell you it's not Masechta Sanhedrin? So why is it here in Masechta Sanhedrin? Like, vos efes. So the answer is that once the Gemara has this machlokas between Rebbe and the Chachamim about Yesh Eim LeMikra, Yesh Eim LeMesoris, the Gemara decides to do a world search, you know, throughout the entire Torah for all the issues that are contingent on Yesh Eim LeMikra or Yesh Eim LeMesoris. So what we're going to have in the next blot is what I would call a Shas Katan, a miniature Shas. We are about to embark on Shas. We're going to learn Kodshim. We're going to learn all sorts of dinim that have nothing to do with Sanhedrin. In fact, I would take a vote. You know, if you gentlemen want to skip it, I don't mind skipping. It would not, like, for example, Agadita. Very often I skip Agadita because I'm not here to teach Agadita. I don't know the keys and the codes of Agadita.
Where does this go from Dalet, from this Dalet to where?
From the beginning of Daf Dalet to the beginning of Daf Hey. That's full blot Gemara.
Okay.
And every few lines we're going to be learning another Sugyan Shas that has nothing to do with Sanhedrin. So if you paid your dues for Sanhedrin, then we owe you how did they say in English, a pitsui. We owe you a compensation.
A refund.
A refund, right.
Discount.
Now, I'm honestly hoping that we'll survive this, because, again, I'm not a Shas Yid, you know, I don't know all of Shas. In fact, the Gemara starts by more or less, like, throwing you into the fire. I mean, there's no Rachmanis here. We're going to go from Taras to Kodshim. We're going to have to know things about Tumas Leda. We're going to have to know issues about what's called Matan Damim, the difference between Chatos and other Karbonos, as to how many Matanos you have to give and where you give the Matanos. Is on the side of the Mizbeach, on the top of the Mizbeach? I mean, that's just the very beginning of this sukkah.
Whatever you want to do, Rabbi.
I'll give it a shot, but I'm just warning you up front. You know, in Hebrew here in Israel, they say Beiravon Mukbal. You familiar with that phrase? Limited liability. All right. So first, let's get there's an introduction. There's like one line, and we'll constantly go back to this one line. That's an introduction or a. It's a heading to this sugya. That's Rabbi Yitzchak, Rabbi Yosef. What's his heading in the name of Rabbi Yochanan? And he gives you a list. Let's see how many giants are on this list. Rabbi Yehuda ben Roetz, Beis Shammai, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Akiva, the five giants who belong to this club. They have membership in the club. Kulu, they all agree, Svirluhu, they hold Yesh Eim La Mikra. And first is Rebbe Hadamaran. Rebbe is the one who reads Yarshiyun as if there were a Vav there, because that's how we punctuate the word, as if there were a Vav there. That's called Yesh Eim La Mikra. And now the Gemara is going to embark upon an analysis of Rabbi Yehuda ben Yoetz, that's in Tum Vitara. Beit Shammai is in Kodshim, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Akiva. Each one of these is going to maintain against the majority, which holds Yesh Eim La Mesores. They are going to maintain Yesh Eim La Mikra. So we now have Rebbe on the list. So let's check off Rebbe on the list as if we're 20% of the way there. Which we're really not, but it gives me a good feeling that we're 20% of the way there. Now we go on to Rabbi Yehuda ben Roetz, and here we're talking about Tumah Vitara. So let me read to you the pasuk, and maybe, Steve, you could tell me where it is in the art scroll, on what page. We're talking about Vayikra Perek Yud Beis, pasuk Beis. Yeah, you want to just tell me Vayikra chapter 12, verse 2. Okay, this is the beginning of Parshas Tazria. Now, if a woman is pregnant, we don't know. Nowadays, we do know whether she's going to give birth to a male or a female. And the difference is going to be in terms of Tuma Vitara. What does that mean? A woman after birth has a period of time which is called Tumas Leda. So you'll have to tell me if I have to write this on the board. Tumas Leda means she's not allowed to resume relations with her husband during this period of time. She's not allowed to go into the Migdash. She's not allowed to eat Kodshim. She has what's called Tumas Leda.
Longer for a daughter than a son.
Excellent. So in the case of a Zachar, the Torah says that this period of time is a 7-day period of time. In the case of an akeva, the Torah says it's shvuayim. And we're going to have a long discussion about this word shvuayim, because it really doesn't say shvuayim in the Torah. We read it as shvuayim, but it's written without the without the yud. So again, that's going to be the springboard to Yesh Eim LaMikra versus Yem Eish LaMasor. But first I want to give you just a sketch, the overall framework of Tumas Leila. So in the case of the birth of a male child, it's 7 days. In the case of a female, it is 14 days. Now, at the termination of this counting of 7 and 14, the Oledes, who gave birth, goes into a period. We thrust her into a period called Dumei Tahara, which means no matter what dam she sees, all her dam is tahar. It's not, she doesn't contract any tumah, she's allowed to live with her husband, etc., etc. And again, how much of a period of time is the Dmei Tahara? So in the case of a male, you'll see it right there in the Pasuk, the Torah says it's 33 days. So it means that when does a woman after birth resume her regular schedule? After 40 days from the birth. Those 40 days from the birth are divided up into two periods. The first 7 days, which is called Dmei Tuma, and then the 33 days that follow are Dmei Tara. In the case of an akeva, if she gave birth to a daughter, then we're going to start with Shvuayim, we're going to start with 14 days, and then we're going to double the number 33, and we're going to end up with 66. So we're going to 66 plus 14 is how much? 80. Is 80. So a woman after birth, in the case of a female, will only resume her regular schedule as a potential nida and shomer siyom kedek, you know, all the various different dinim, after 80 days. So who gets the better deal here? A woman who gave birth to a boy or a woman who gave birth to a girl?
Depends on her.
Exactly. If you're talking about Tmei Tuma, then it's better to give birth to a boy, because then you only have Tmei Tuma for a week. But if you talk about Yemei Tara, she gets a much better deal of 66 days as opposed to 33 in the case of a female. Okay. Now we're ready for Rabbi Yehuda ben Roitz. Now, if you gentlemen have an art school, if anybody has an art school, I'm curious about the name Roitz. Maybe by chance, the Masifta disappointed me. He usually helps out with the meaning of names. I'm always curious about the meaning of names. I don't know. Roitz is a very good name. So I don't know why his father's name was Roitz. Nothing there?
I'm looking.
Nothing. Okay. Maybe he didn't know the answer either. Strange name, Roitz. Anyway. Okay. So Rabbi Yehuda ben Roitz, if you remember our heading, is committed to the same opinion as Rebbe, that Yesh Eim La Mikra. And that's what we're going to embark upon now. This Sanya we learned in a Braisa. This Braisa is going to tell us that Rabbi Yehuda ben Roitz holds that Yesh Eim La Mikra. Shalu Talmidim es Rabbi Yehuda ben Roitz. The students were wondering about the pasuk that says vitama'a, in the case of a female, shvuayim kinidasa. Again, I read it as shvuayim, correct? Let's take a look in the chumash itself, and we'll see what it says over here. V'im nekeva seleh, it says vitama'a, with only shvuayim, which we read as shvuayim, is written here with one yud. Now watch what happens here. If you remove that second yud, and you only have one yud, then the word should be read as shivim. Again, we have a tradition that we read it as if there were two yuds there, which means shvuayim, 2 weeks. And we're talking about Dmei Tuma. Hadmei Tuma, in the case of a birth of a female, extend for 2 weeks. But they, the Talmidim, asked their Rebbe, Rabbi Yehuda ben Roitz, how should I interpret this word? Ekra ni shivim, should I read it as if it said 70? And then the absence of the extra yud, which would make it into Shvuayim, means that we have to understand that for 70 days, she will be in a state of Tumah. Yachol teheyo letis nekeva tmeya shivim yom. Shall we therefore derive the conclusion, based on the way it's written in the Torah, which is called Yeshem Lemesora, that she'll be Tmeya for 70 full days? So I don't read it as 2 weeks, but I read it as 70 days. Amalehen, so Rav Yehuda ben Roetz responds, and he says it cannot be. Why? Timei v'tiher bizachar, timei v'tiher b'nekeva. There's an absolute mirror image between the first part of this parasha and the second. The first part of the parasha is when she gave birth to a male. And in that case, we have the number of days of Tumah, followed by the number of days of Tara. And there's an exact mirror image in terms of the mathematical ratio in the Sefer when we get to the pasuk that says that she gave birth to a girl. Timei v'tir. She starts with Yimei Tumah, and then she goes into Yimei Tara. Ma, let's go back to the first case. Kishetir bizachar. How long of a period of time did the Torah give for Tara in the case of a Zachar? Do you remember this? 33 days, correct? And B'nekeva Kiflayim, in the case of a Nekeva, the Torah gave us 66. So the ratio is 2-1, Nekeva to Zachar. Af Kishetime, let's go back to the days of Tumah, is B'Zachar, B'nekeva Kiflayim. That whatever the number is in the case of Zachar, we're going to multiply it by 2, double it in the case of a Nekeva. And therefore, since in the case of a Zachar, the Torah explicitly says that she's Tmeya for 7 days, right, it says Shivas Yomim. Then we multiply it by 2, double it in order to get 14. It can't be that you read it as Shivim, as 70 days of Tumah. It has to be Shvuayim, 14 days of Tumah. Now again, at this point, notice that Rabbi Yehuda ben Roetz bases his argument on a logical equation or analogy between Zachar and Nekeva. He doesn't quote what we call Mikra. Mikra means the way we read it. We read it as Shvuayim. So Liachar Sheyatzu, when the Talmidim left him, Rabbi Yehuda starts running after them. Yatzo Umechazer Achreim. He starts running after them. Amar Lehem, and he says to them, Yatem Zkukim Lekach. Forget what I just told you. It's totally unnecessary. Shvuayim Karinon. We read it as Shvuayim as if there were two yuds. Even though it doesn't say Shvuayim. The Yesh Eimla Mikra. And the way we interpret the Pasuk is based on the way we read it, not based on the way it's written. So it's written, which is called Yesh Eimla Mesores, as Shivim. But we're going to interpret it as if it was written as Shvuayim because we have a vocalization in which we read it as Shvuayim. So now we have Rabbi Yehuda ben Roetz together with Rebbe. Both of them are of the opinion Yesh Eim LaMikra. Now, if you hold Yesh Eim LaMisores, how do you know that the days of Tumah of Aledas Nekeva are 14 in number, not 70 in number? The answer is based on the logic of Rabbi Yehuda ben Yoetz, that we have an absolute mirror image here, where whatever is true on Zachar side of the equation, whether it's Yimei Tumah or Yimei Tara, we double it on the Nekeva side of the equation. Hence, if we double the days of Tumah of a Zachar from 7 to 14, we know that the days of Tumah of a Nekeva are 14. But Rabbi Yehuda ben Yoetz says, I don't even need that, because I have a universal principle called Yesh Eim LaMikra. And based on Yesh Eim LaMikra, the way we know how to read the word, we read it as Shvuayim. So I'll just tell you this, Rabbi Yehuda, if a person was a Balkori in a shul, and he read the word Shivim, you know, we like to be very lenient, you know, and we don't want to correct him because it's a little embarrassing to correct him. In this case, we must correct him. Because if he says Shivim, he might be reading it based on the Mesorah, but he's violating the Mikra the way we have to read it.
First of all, it depends upon the shul, because I've been to many shuls where they're very
They correct him on everything.
All the time, yes.
Right, so that wasn't our opinion. Then that's what
that's not my question.
That's what you call amaratus. Because if you're not amaratus, you don't know exactly when to correct the Balkari, so you always correct the Balkari. Which, by the way, wouldn't bother me so much except when you get to a bar mitzvah boy.
Yeah, exactly.
I had it in my family, I don't want to publicize this, but one of my children was totally smashed. I mean, he prepared for months in advance. Now, some children prepare their career for the bar mitzvah, and they're experts at it. They have almost a natural talent. Either you're born with it or you're not born with it. And if you're not born with it, you kill yourself because your friends in your class are all reading the kriya, and you're not. So it's a bush of a cherpa. But meanwhile, you're not as solid as they are, and then somebody gets up there and smashes you on something which it doesn't even require correction, and it could push and break a person's
My question.
Yeah, that's a class I should give here somewhere anyway on this issue about when you have to get the Balkari to repeat. Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. So my question is, if he's interpreting according Yesh Hem the Mikra,
right.
So he's reading it as Shiva'im, which is 70. So why does he?
No, he's reading it as Shvu'ayim, and that's why I told you that if the Balkari reads it as Shiv'im, make sure that you correct him. It's got to be written not the way it's written. I'm sorry. It's got to be read not the way it's written. There's a discrepancy between the way it's written as Shiv'im and the way it's read as Shvu'ayim. We have to read it as if it said Shvu'ayim with a vav. There is no vav in the Torah itself. It says Shiv'im, but if you add the vav, it becomes Shvu'ayim.
Ah.
Right? The vav is like an extra yud.
You're adding the vav, not...
Correct. Okay. And we're not going to add the vav chas v'sholom to the Sefer Torah. That would possible the Sefer Torah.
Right?
But we're going to add the vav in our minds, in the abstract thinking, to read it properly. And that's called Yeshem Lemikra. And if we're going to interpret the way we read it, and we read it as Shvu'ayim, as if there were a vav there. And now we get into Kodshim, because we want to add to the list Beit Shammai. Okay, Rabosai. So I'm just going to introduce this sugya, and Bli Neder will try to pick it up tomorrow. But just as an introduction, you have to know that in all the avodos of a karbon, there's one of four avodos which is the epitome, which is the pinnacle. It's the pivotal avoda. What's that called? Srika. When they sprinkle the dam on the Mizbeach. Now, there are two ways of doing Zrika, depending on which carbon you're talking about. One Zrika is on the side of the Mizbeach, otherwise known as the Kir HaMizbeach, and the blood drips down the side of the Mizbeach. Then there's another Zrika, which is done on Karnos HaMizbeach, in which the Kohen climbs up to the roof of the Mizbeach. There are four corners on the roof of the Mizbeach, and he has to place the dam on those four corners. Now, here's where chatos, if you want to make a note of it, carbon chatos is very unique. Carbon chatos is the only carbon that requires what we call four matonos. Matonos means matan domin, in the sprinkling of the dam. Okay? And in the other carbonos, let's say, for example, an ola or an asham or a shlomim, he has a whole introduction here, the mesifta, he says you need what's called shtei matonos shein arba. Now, shtei matonos shein arba is complicated, but basically it means that you draw a diagonal between, let's say, the dromis mizrachis and the maravis tzfonis, and basically you put the dam on that corner, and the dam sort of splits and goes on all four corners. That's called shtayim shein arba. Yes. You may recall this from the karbonos, the mishnayos and tzfonis that we use, for those of you who recite them in the morning.
One sprinkling does two corners.
So you have one sprinkling on one diagonal and the other on the other diagonal corner, and the Torah recognizes that as four matonos, but all you need is two matonos. And the main thing for us to remember is that in all kodshim, in all karbonos, with the exception of one that's called a chatos, you need two matan domes. Now, with regard to chatos, we said that you need four matanos on four chronos, but here we have to know that even within the constellation of chatos, there is one unique category of chatos that's different than all the other chatos. And that's called chatos pnimis. Pnimis means inside. Inside means inside the heichal. Now, inside the heichal was another mizbech. What was that mizbech called? The mizbech hazav, otherwise known as the mizbech haktoris. Outside the heichal, in the azara, there was a mizbech hanechoshes that was made of copper. Inside, in the pnimis, in the heichal, there was a mizbech hazav. Now, as a general rule, chatos, although it has a unique din of matan damim, it requires four, but that's done on the mizbech hanechoshes out in the azara. There's something called a chatos pnimis. I'll give you one example of a chatos pnimis. Do you remember we spoke about smichas kenim in our Mishnah? So we were talking about a parahelim davar. So a parahelim davar is a cow, a bull, that's brought for a violation of the tzibur of a very severe yisur. And that korban, which is a chatos pnimis, the zrik has to be done on the mizbeach hazav, on the inner mizbeach. All the other korbanos, the zrika is on the outside of the mizbeach. There's another difference in that, keep in mind that zrika on the mizbeach hachitzon, in most chatos, is done on the kir mizbeach, which is below the chut hasikra, on the bottom half of the mizbeach. Now, we have to know the following. That there's a rule in kodshim, that if the Torah sets up a requirement in kodshim, it's only lemitzvah, but it's not likuva, critical. Let's call it critical. It's not critical. It's not indispensable. That's the word. So, not indispensable. Okay, that's a double negative. Meaning that b'dieved, if you didn't do the mitzvah the way it should be, the carbon is still kosher. However, there are certain requirements when the Torah repeats itself a second time that mean it's not le mitzvah, but it's li'ikuva, which means it's absolutely critical. And without it, the carbon is possible. Now, this is called, in the language of the Shashina of Akosuv, Li'akev, that the Torah sometimes repeats itself in Kodshim to teach you that a certain requirement is absolutely indispensable. You can't live without it. And in the absence of that mitzvah, the Karban is completely possible. One last word of introduction, and we'll pick this up tomorrow. When we talk about whether the Karban is kosher or not, b'dieved, if you didn't do it right, we're going to have machlokas beisil beit shamai tomorrow, mirtz Hashem. What happens in a case of a korban chatos, where instead of doing four matanos, he did only one matanah? All this is talking about what, Rabbo said? There's a very key concept in kodshim, and I can't overemphasize it. What's that called? You got to write this down if you don't know. It's called kapara. Everything about the korban hinges on whether it's machaper or it's not machaper. If the carbon is mechaper, then you might not have done it the perfect way. It's not embellished. It's not the mitzvah l'chatchila min amuvchar, but you achieve the carbon. You will not repeat the process. We only give you one shot. If, on the other hand, it's li'kuva, you've left out something that's absolutely critical, like instead of doing four matanas, you did only one matana according to Beis Shammai, then what we're talking about is the absence of kapara. And if there's no kapara because the carbon is possible, then you have to bring a second carbon to replace the first carbon. All right, we'll go into this a little bit more in detail tomorrow as we enter the Shas for the next blot. Okay then? Everyone should have a great day.